I got home last night and I had a package on my doorstep, and it was from Green Chef, who are my sponsors for this series. I was absolutely blown away with what was inside. Not only did they have the step-by-step recipe cards in there, but they had all the ingredients and as fresh as you can get them. Last night, I cooked the duck in balsamic glaze, which I'd never tried before. These pre-portioned ingredients allowed me to try this new flavour completely risk-free, and I was able to eat the exact right amount of these ingredients. Not only that, but they had tender stem broccoli. How many other food boxes send tender stem broccoli? It was unbelievably delicious, and I can't recommend it enough. Their high-quality, fresh, seasonal ingredients just blew me away. And it's allowed me to eat consistently and have a routine whilst eating healthily. So get 40% off your first box and 20% off your next three boxes with the code GREENSTRONG. That's GREENSTRONG for 40% off your first box and 20% off your next three boxes. Hello and welcome to Headstrong. My name is Louis Strong and I host this podcast. Headstrong is a podcast where I sit down with a number of individuals in the public eye to talk to them about their life and their careers, but notably, I want to talk to them about their vulnerabilities so I can understand and learn what the word headstrong means to them. And to me, it means to believe in yourself, to talk about your vulnerabilities and reinforce your self-worth. Now, this is the final episode of season 7, episode 12, and I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Kit Connor, who I did Sort of House Rules with a few years ago. Kit is currently the lead role in the beautifully sensitive production called Heartstopper on Netflix. If you haven't seen it yet, I can thoroughly recommend it. I think it's absolutely wonderful. Kit's take on the character Nick is beautifully poetic and has a real depth to the character as well. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please do go leave a 5-star rating, leave a review, and please do subscribe and check us out on Instagram. Kit, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong. How are we doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? Very excited.
Very, very well. Just before we started rolling on here, we were just discussing that this has been some years in the making, but not your first time on a Headstrong platform, shall we remember?
No. I think back at the beginning of lockdown, we did a little Instagram Live. I remember now. Wow.
What did we talk about? Crikey, I can't even remember. I think we were talking about lockdown, weren't we?
We were talking about lockdown. We were talking about school and things like that, because I was still very much... That was when I was sort of at the time of my GCSEs, so it was whether or not I was going to do them. I remember it was this... A very stressful time.
I remember that. God, how times have changed significantly.
Exactly.
Right. Did you know then anything about this production? That's the first thing.
Back then, I knew about the graphic novels at the time, but I did not know anything about the production. I knew nothing. I had no clue that suddenly my life would be turned around.
God, I mean, that's one way of putting it. I mean, how does it feel to have... You know, if I say the words to you right now, arguably the biggest show in the country, if not the world, and you're the leading man, that's pretty nuts, eh?
Well, I mean, there's a very nice way to put it. I mean, it's definitely done very well so far, and we're super happy. And
I think,
yeah, thank you. I mean, Joe and I, Joe Locke and I, sort of we put in a lot of time. Into you know this show and sort of creating these characters, so for it to all pay off and people to actually like it, and you know there've been some incredible reactions, so to have that has been wonderful.
I mean, well, let's talk about the show first, and we'll come on to loads of other bits and bobs, I imagine, together. Let's talk about kind of why do you think this kind of series resonates with such a huge audience? Because it's not just reaching out to gay people or bisexual people. It's able to touch everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it's a type of queer representation that hasn't really been done before in a lot of cases. Because I think a lot of, especially queer teen shows, are very, very almost overwhelmingly negative in a lot of senses. You know, you've got some amazing shows like, you know, Euphoria and, you know, even things like Sex Education, which is you know, an incredible show. And also, you know, not that negative, but a lot of queer representation in the mainstream media is very gritty and dark. So I think it's really important, especially for queer people, to just see queer representation and see queer people being happy, and queer people sort of just you know, living their life and falling in love and sort of navigating that teenage sort of slightly awkward, uncomfortable, you know, period of time. So yeah.
How would you, for anyone that's not listening, we're obviously talking about, who is listening? We're talking about Heartstopper and Netflix. How would you sell it to them in an elevator? You've got 30 seconds.
All right, so Heartstopper is essentially about two boys at an all-boys school. One is an openly gay, sort of slightly nerdy boy, and then one is a stereotypical, seemingly straight rugby sort of popular jock kind of character. And I play that jock somehow. and essentially, they sort of befriend one another, and then they slowly grow closer. And my character Nick sort of starts to question his sexuality. And yeah, it's basically an exploration of sort of teenage years and teenage life as a queer student in an all boys school. And also there are sort of side characters as well in an all girls school. Yeah, I mean, there's really something for everyone in the LGBTQIA plus community. So
The whole thing is beautifully poetic. I mean, it's so wonderfully shot. The soundtrack is unbelievable, and I love the kind of the almost supernatural, magical touches of the graphics. Yeah, I think that's really it just adds a little bit of magic to it that is so mesmerizing. I've got to say, did you know anything about that when you were shooting?
Yeah, I mean, that was always really part of the plan, because obviously it's an adaptation of Alice Oseman's amazing graphic novel series. And the art in these graphic novels is so prominent to the story. So, you know, going into that, even just reading the script, you can see that we had things like Heartstopper moments, which was basically when the animations would come into play. And in this script, there were illustrations, there were drawings you know, around the text. And I had never seen that before.
No,
I thought that was something that's really interesting. And it actually drew me in when I was reading the script for the first time and thinking, I mean, even just looking at the script, this is something really cool and fresh and new. And I thought that, you know, that was always kind of part of the plan. It's a difficult thing to sort of add these sort of 2D illustrations to a real life show. But I think it's done very subtly and very, you know, beautifully, in my opinion, just sort of bringing those illustrations to life.
It's very difficult to get that right, because as you say, it could go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, of course it does not. Because the show, I just checked on IMDb, it's a solid 9 out of 10. I mean, mate, that you don't get those sort of numbers anyway.
Yeah, I mean, for a while, I don't know if it still is, for a while we were on Rotten Tomatoes, we were 100% Rotten Tomatoes certified fresh, which was honestly mental, you know.
That is crazy.
So, I mean, that was, you know, for at least the first week of launch, I think, I don't know if it still is, but that was a real sort of thing for us when we were just going like, okay, maybe this... It was always kind of our little show, you know, especially when we were making it. It didn't feel like a big Netflix production. It all felt very, you know, intimate and private and personal. So, you know, for it to sort of come out and almost immediately blow up, and for so many people to sort of feel so strongly about it was, you know, amazing. But at the same time, it was just very, you know, overwhelming. Because it was, you know, like I say, it was just our little show. You know, we were just making it. We almost forgot when the first interviews came, when the first sort of reviews, came out. We almost sort of forgot that would happen. You know, we just thought people are just going to watch it. We'll see if they like it. Who knows? But yeah.
All the press, the tour, the like publicity, yeah. And everything. It's crazy, isn't it? Because you just think that you're just going to release this thing and it's going to be watching, or, you know, everyone will enjoy it. And that's kind of that. But yeah. Lo and behold, here you are with 2.2 million people following you on social media.
It's mental, yeah.
I just looked as well. It's still 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So there you go.
That's good. That's good. Good sign.
Let's talk about your character. Because, as you said in your kind of elevator pitch, he is the cool jock guy, the rugby dude. But I don't think he's the stereotypical cool guy from what I remember at school. I think you add a layer of sensitivity to him. You know, it's almost like he doesn't need to be heard to be seen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He can command a room and have this charisma without having to be the loud guy. Which I think is a really nice layer. To steal the words from Shrek, I feel like he's got a lot of layers.
Yes, like an onion, absolutely. I think that that's a very good take on it, actually, because I sort of say that he gets this popularity and these friends very, like, effortlessly. You know, he's very good at rugby, he's likeable, he's easy to talk to, and therefore he kind of attracts these, you know, more popular friends. And I think that I think I've said this before, but I sort of took some inspiration from, I don't know if you've seen Normal People. But watching Connell's character, having that sort of effortless popularity, and he's not your classic kind of jock, he's not your classic sort of cool guy, because he does have that sensitivity and that sort of that realness about him. And I think that that's kind of what I saw in Nick as well when I was reading the script. And that's kind of what I wanted to put into the character. So, I mean, I think that while he is definitely in some ways the stereotypical sort of rugby boy, and the fact that, you know, everyone kind of assumes that he's straight, he is very much, I that's definitely what I was trying to go for, is that sort of sense of sensitivity I do honestly think that although Nick is very sort of confident, he is also slightly introverted in a way.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think as well, obviously I know that it's the novel first, but that kind of story wouldn't work as well, in my opinion, if it is this outgoing, like, stereotype of a brute of a player. And then because I think you'd be like, well, that's a bit predictable. Whereas actually seeing you go through all this confusion, conflicting ideas, and then coming to the realization, I think it's so much more powerful, because you're so much more of a layered human.
Yeah, absolutely. Much more complex character, yeah.
Definitely. Do you remember the first scene for your audition? Which one was it?
I think, originally, I did a self-tape and I originally auditioned for the role of Charlie. So I think a lot of the Heart Super fans just find that very, very, very confusing, because I look nothing like Charlie. Nothing about me screams Charlie. And they seem to think that everything about me screams Nick. So I auditioned. There's this beautiful scene, I think in episode 4, where Nick has just run to Charlie's house in the rain, and they go into Charlie's bedroom, and then Charlie, before Nick can even speak, sort of essentially tells him how much he regrets kissing him, because they kiss for the first time, and essentially saying, like, he doesn't want to ruin their friendship, essentially because he thinks that Nick has that Nick regrets the kiss as well. So that was the scene I actually used to audition with, and I just thought it was a really beautifully written scene and very just stripped back and genuine. And I think that's when Charlie is at his most sort of vulnerable in front of Nick. So I thought that was beautiful. But then I think they quite quickly realized that I was much better for Nick. So I think probably one of the first things that I auditioned for with Nick was there's a scene with a character called Imogen on a bench in the park, where he's sort of essentially talking about how
it's the one in the trailer, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's saying he doesn't quite feel like he's really being true to himself, and that he feels like he has to kind of change himself to fit in with others. So I think that's a really relatable scene for a lot of people. And I think it's a beautiful scene. Doing that as my first audition for Nick and then actually filming it was quite a full circle moment. Yeah.
I love that part of the narrative, actually, where it's, I mean, this is a spoiler alert for anyone who's listening, when, you know, you felt obliged to kind of say yes to go on this date because you're in front of your mates, you've got that peer pressure over there, and then she's got, you know, oh, her dog's died, and you're like, because that's so relatable, not even just for anyone, I mean, that's relatable for anybody in that kind of world, which is crazy. And it's just so wonderfully done, man. I can't say how happy I am that you got this and you nailed it.
Thank you so much.
So, top dog. What I want to ask you now is how did you find out about the role? Was it a phone call?
So, as I said, I didn't know about the graphic novel.
Oh, no, I mean, when you got given the role.
Oh, when I got given the role?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
So I basically... it was a phone call. So I was at dinner with them. I was having dinner downstairs with my parents. We were just kind of, it was a pretty normal dinner, but then I was kind of expecting a call. We were all expecting a call from my agent to see whether, you know, whether it was good news or bad news. I got the call. I went upstairs because, you know, if it was bad news, I didn't really want to sort of get that news in front of my parents. I got the news from my agent. She's, you know, pretty immediately went out and said it, you know, got this role. Obviously I was just over the moon, but then I thought I could try and do something cool here. So I went downstairs and just sort of didn't say anything and just kept on eating. And my parents obviously realized that was an important phone call. So they were probably thinking, oh my God, like maybe he didn't get it. Maybe. And then they were like, is everything okay? And I was just like, oh, I'm just going to be in the Netflix shows. Yeah. Simple. And then just kept on. I mean, I would say that that's what I thought went down. I feel like I probably didn't play it that cool. But, that's what I tried to do. That's the joke that I tried to play.
Oh, that's classic. I love it. I can only imagine that was probably not how it went down.
It was very difficult. So I don't think I succeeded quite well.
That's so, so exciting. Gosh, and how long ago was that? The shoot?
We probably got told in February of 2021, I'd say. I guess so, because then we started rehearsals in March and then started shooting in April, I believe. We had about 2 weeks of rehearsals, but I think we may have found out in February.
How important were those 2 weeks of rehearsals just to kind of build that kind of chemistry and bond?
I think that there were... three main elements of that rehearsal period that were extremely important for us. Is the first thing that you mentioned that it was about building that chemistry between between all the cast members, especially between Joe and I. Just to, you know, I think the heart of the show is the relationship between Nick and Charlie and the relationships between, you know, all the characters really. So if that didn't quite feel real, then the show wouldn't have worked. Yeah. So I think that was a big thing for us to just get to know each other, get a bit more comfortable with each other, and sort of get used to acting with one another. I think that was a big thing. I'd say the second thing is getting to know our characters. You know, we did a lot of actually very classic sort of theatre techniques, like some of Stanislavskian techniques in some ways. We were doing for example, we did hot seating. And things like that, which I'd never done for a sort of TV and film role before. But it was really interesting because we weren't just hot seating. We also had Alice, the writer, who obviously knew the characters better than anyone. So if there was something that I didn't know about my character, I could just ask Alice and then you got a pretty, you know, concrete answer. But then even there were certain things that Alice hadn't thought about certain characters, so it was really cool to almost then sort of come up with something new and come up with a different element of the character's background, and that was really exciting. But also I think there was one really important element, which was we had a couple sort of sessions with Stonewall who were really, really helpful in essentially just sort of training everyone who was going to step on set to essentially create a really safe, like sort of comfortable space for everyone on set, you know, in terms of, pronouns and just general sort of like the importance of queer representation. I think that was something that, you know, we focused on a lot in those 2 weeks, and that was really important. And it definitely paid off throughout the entire shoot.
That's really cool, actually. That's really a nice touch. So I imagine that this production's gone quite quick, hasn't it, from shooting to release?
Well, that's the thing, because it did. It was about a 4 month, really. It was about a 4 month shoot. It was quite a short shoot, to be honest. I mean, it felt like forever, to be honest, because after, I'm not even the shoot went by quite quickly, but it felt, after we wrapped, it felt like forever until sort of anything was happening with the show. But, you know, the nature of it being Netflix is that even when the show is completely done, you've got a dub, you know, for loads of different languages and things like that, you know, which is really cool. But it, you know, I think everyone in the cast was just so keen, so eager for it to come out finally. When, you know, all the fans as well, because they're obviously sort of translated, a lot of them translated from the graphic novels to the show. So they just, anytime, you know, Joe and I were announced, or the rest of the cast were announced, or even just slight behind the scenes pictures, they were just so excited and would just eat everything up.
So you were, this is a 4 month shoot, and obviously you're basically in every day, let's go with. And you were still directly involved in your education. Now, This is always something that I like to talk about, because I talked about it with Asa before in quite a lot of depth. And I always think that just education on a set is a bizarre concept, and one that not many people will understand, but it's something that you've done all your life, having acted for, you know, 10 years.
Yeah.
But just describe it for this production.
Well, actually, I mean, this production is a weird one. So I, like you say, so I've sort of grown up doing things like tutoring on set. You know, when we did, I think when we did Slaughterhouse Rules, I didn't have a tutor because it was during a summer holiday, I think.
Hey, August. Yeah. The joys of shooting in August.
Thank God. But but I have sort of grown up, you know, you'll be doing a really intense scene, and then all the adults can then go and sort of have a cup of tea, and then you have to go and do some maths or something like that. It's very, very draining and very tiring. I didn't enjoy it all that much, to be honest, but that's the nature of being a child actor. But Heartstopper was actually one of the first, I think it's the first TV and film job that I did after I finished my GCSE. So therefore I didn't need a tutor. So it was a very interesting thing, because suddenly I was also able to work 12 hours a day. I was able to work adult
for the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the first time. So I was really excited about that. I always got so frustrated when I was filming things like Slaughterhouse, because, you know, I could work 9.5 hours and everyone else could work 12. So I remember being dragged off set, you know, when there were still a couple hours left in the day, and everyone else, and I just, especially something with Slaughterhouse Rules, you know, we all had so much fun. But I was really excited with Heartstopper to be able to do that. But it did mean that sort of, because I was in every day and I was working 12 hours a day, I, you know, left the house at maybe 7 and then got home at probably, you know, 8 or 9. And it was generally a very sort of busy day. So I didn't honestly have much time to work at all, especially by the end of the shoot. Joe and I were just exhausted. Not in a bad way, but it was a lot of work. So we were tired, you know. So I did then go back to school after 4 months and just sort of think like, okay, let's try and catch up now. But yeah, I mean, tutoring on set is a very difficult thing. I think different people enjoy it. It really depends on your sort of outlook. But yeah, for Heartstopper, it was really just Heartstopper, and then I sort of reap the consequences afterwards, basically.
How's it all going?
It's going all right, to be fair. To be fair, I think after missing 4 months, I think I'm doing okay, considering. I think my school were a little bit worried at first, but then I think they've sort of taken it in their stride now, and we're all trying to get there. And yeah, I've got my A-levels in a few weeks.
Pretty, seriously, soon.
Yeah, so it's
dare I ask, don't feel free not to say, what are you taking?
I'm doing English history and drama,
mate. So you're not even like You're not even DOSing.
It's a lot.
English A-level was difficult.
Honestly, English A-level is the bane of my life right now. It is so, it's difficult. It is. And history is not exactly easy either. Drama is surprisingly a lot harder than I was expecting as well. But you know what? Like it's, I don't know, at least they're all sort of subjects that I am in some way interested in. I find A-level does have a slight thing of slightly ruining subjects, possibly.
Well, I remember doing drama A-level, and was your last, have you had to do a devised piece?
Yeah.
And then did you have to do a scripted one as well?
Yeah, we've done loads. We've done like a devised, a scripted, I think maybe like two or three more scripted ones over the year. Yeah.
I know, because the essays of the drama ones are just...
Oh, they're so long and so...
It's just like, it's so specific to the mark scheme, and it's just like, I'm never going to need to learn this mark scheme for anything else except this hour of my life.
Especially as an actor, it seems slightly against the grain, because, you know, if I'm walking onto a stage, I'm not thinking, okay, I'm going to walk on with... And even one of my drama teachers actually admitted this to me a couple of years ago, but he was like, you know, obviously when you're walking on stage, you're not going to be going, oh, okay, I'm going to walk with a strong posture and a wide gait and this. And it's like, you just sort of do it naturally, certainly for a lot of actors. So I think it is slightly strange to then kind of almost make up details that you wouldn't actually do in real life, but you sort of, you'll get the marks. But yeah, I think that's just the sort of nature of the subject.
You found yourself in some remarkable credits today. I mean, we talk about Rocket Man. You've got this now, which is just absolutely phenomenal. TV shows, films. How often do you have those pinch yourself moments? I mean, was there a moment in this production where you were like, whoa, like this is a Netflix show or this is Olivia Colman? I don't know what it was for you. What's your pinch yourself moment?
I think Olivia Colman definitely was one thing. I think we spent 2 days shooting with Olivia just because she's Olivia Colman. You know, she's very much in demand. But we were so lucky to have her for those 2 days. And even for 2 days, she already just sort of, you know, she was so amazing and was just lovely to everyone. But I think that was like a massive pinch me moment, just because, especially going from spending the rest of the shoot with a cast who was so fresh and so new, which was wonderful, you know, to have a cast full of young people who were new to the industry and everything was fresh and cool and exciting. I loved that. But then at the same time, to also go and get that sort of the other side of the table, to go to Olivia Colman, who has been in this industry she's just achieved so much. That's the thing. She's just incredible.
What's the winner?
Exactly. And I think that's an honor that not every actor sort of gets. And you know, to be able to work with an Oscar every time, you know, I was able to do a film with Colin Firth several years ago, and that was amazing as well. But to be able to have a scene, especially some of the scenes that I had with Olivia Colman, were, you know, quite challenging and quite crucial to the show. I think it was just an absolute honor as an actor to be able to do that.
That whole cast is so strong as well. It was so good.
Yeah, I think it's such a great young core. There's so much talent there, I think.
So we talk about the show now being out. And it's, as you say, the graphic novels have a fan base and the show's become hugely popular. And now you've been catapulted into what can only be described as a spotlight. You know, what do you think of this? You know, happening to you, you're like, it's crazy, right?
It's absolutely mental. I mean, I honestly, because like I said, it always felt like our little show. The fact that it's now been seen by so many people and had this kind of effect on so many people is wonderful. I mean, I think that it is definitely a little bit scary, you know, in certain ways, because I think you never quite feel prepared for it and you never feel ready. But at the same time, it's amazing, you know. There was a Heartstopper fan who tweeted out that they essentially used my coming out scene by showing it to their parents and used it to come out to their parents. And I think, like, I was just like, that is incredible to be able to, as an 18-year-old, to be able to like be given the opportunity to have that effect on someone's life and give them the confidence and kind of empower them to do that, even just a little bit, is incredible. So I think that is honestly one of the most beautiful sort of sides of the job. I mean, I think that, like, you know, the whole social media aspect, like suddenly gaining a couple million in just over a week is utterly insane.
Yeah.
And slightly overwhelming, because it's like, you know, when I got just before I got announced as Nick and as playing Nick, I think I was at just under 10k, and then literally the day before Heartstopper came out, I was at about 200k, and then suddenly it just blew up. So yeah, it's crazy, but I'm so grateful. And you know, anytime that I meet a Heartstopper fan, it's unbelievable. I still just don't know why they're, because you know, it's still just, I, the way I see it is, I'm very like a quite a normal guy just from Croydon, just, so it's a bit odd. I'm just Kit, so it's a bit strange that these, you know, these wonderful people are so, get so excited to you know, meet me or to speak to me or anything like that. I think that's a really humbling experience. Yeah,
I mean, something that I do want to just talk about, because obviously being a mental health podcast, somewhat, I'm interested to hear what you think, because social media can have, you know, a serious effect on anybody. And having kind of over 2 million people like actively following you now.
Yeah.
You said you were overwhelmed by that, but do you feel like anxious at all that, you know, you might slip up here and there? Because it's a lot of power and responsibility, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that...
I mean, I know you've got an amazing team, Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. My team is absolutely wonderful and would never let me slip up. But yeah, I'm, at the same time, it's a scary thing. And I think that social media is definitely a double-edged sword. It's so wonderful in certain ways. Like I mentioned, you know, you get these wonderful moments where fans can reach out to you and tell you about, you know, amazing effects of the show. And you know, I think that it can be a great source for change and things like that. But at the same time, you know, social media can be an extremely toxic place and an extremely sort of, yes, slightly scary place. And it can build a lot of, you know, anxiety and then also sort of, you know, slightly negative mindsets about, you know, body image and identity and things like that. And I think that that's obviously like, can be a catastrophic effect of social media. I honestly have spoken to many, you know, especially other people in the Heartstopper cast. I've spoken to them about the possibility of maybe when sort of in a few weeks' time, when the sort of, you know, press out of Heartstopper has slightly died down and things like that, I might just sort of take a break from social media for a little while. And I joked about maybe getting like a flip phone or something, just sort of just having that, living that sort of 2000s dream. Yeah, I think that would be honestly something that I would consider, just because I think that it can also be important to just live in the real world. Because although it's amazing to have these you know, wonderful people saying such wonderful things about me and the show and the other cast members, I think it is also important that you know, I'm living sort of the same life. I'm living the same life as I always used to. I'm living the same life as my friends. And I think that that's important. And I think that if I'm constantly looking down at my phone, sort of seeing what the internet has to say, then I'm not really living in the real world. And I think that can have, you know, many effects on sort of mental health and things like that. So, yeah.
I think as well with the show specifically, and I know that the graphic novels later on do this, there's a great opportunity to touch on things like mental health in a show like this, because I know that it will be done so delicately and so, you know, carefully, and that will also really help inspire, you know, a whole other group of people. And I think that's really important. And it's weird as well that it's set in a school, because I think the way that the characters are portrayed are so lovely, most of them, and... you know, you look at schools now and I don't think we're doing enough in schools to help talk about certainly what you're talking about in that, but also mental health. Like, I don't think PSHE is a good enough thing to be pushing stuff like
that. I agree. And I think that, you know, even in season one, we hint at the character Charlie's sort of developing eating disorder, which is very prominent in the later graphic novels. And if we were to get season two, then that's, you know, what we'd possibly talk about. But I think also the beauty of Heartstopper is that we approach these kind of issues with a very optimistic lens, you know, in a very, very much a sense that even though these are really awful issues and very serious, we try to sort of give people who are struggling with these kind of issues a sense of hope and a sense that, you know, even if, because it's unrealistic to also suggest that, you know, mental health can just be cured. I think it's healthy to sort of just make people, give people hope that, you know, it will get better, and that sometimes, you know, even when you're feeling just absolutely awful, which, you know, a lot of the characters go through, especially in the later graphic novels, it does get better. I think that's something that's really important, that hopefully if we were to, you know, go into later seasons, we could explore that more.
I mean, it's a perfect poster behind your head. I feel like you've chosen this on purpose, Maestro.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be okay. I didn't, but you know what? I'm going to go with it, actually.
It's rocking. It's working. What else did I want to talk about? Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it already, kind of this double life. It's kind of crazy where you're kind of doing these film sets and then you're acting with the likes of Olivia Colman, Nick Frost, Louis Strong, stuff like that. No, but then...
That was smooth. That was very smooth.
And how do you switch off? How do you give yourself time and preserve your own well-being? Because it's so important to, you know, finish a day like that, and it can be overwhelming, and being on a film set, they're such big beasts. But then you actually need to just chill out and rest and look after your well-being. What do you do?
I mean, that's the thing. I think that one thing that helps is I never went to drama school. I've gone to a sort of a normal secondary school and normal primary school. I have a lot of friends who have absolutely nothing to do with acting and do not care about it at all, which I think is really important for me, because it gives me that balance. Because although I make some wonderful friends in the industry, and, you know, especially, you know, for films like Slaughterhouse and Rocket Man and Heartstopper, obviously, you know, I've made some wonderful friends who I do genuinely consider as very close friends. But it is also important to be around people who have completely different interests. And I think that does encourage me to sort of switch off the actor mindset and just be a teenager, you know? So it's things like, you know, just sitting down and watching a film, watching a TV show. And even though that is technically my job, you know, as an actor, it's just sort of forgetting the fact that I've, you know, got a job and that I've got all these things and that I've got an Instagram following. I mean, I honestly think one of the main things that got me through, like, for example, lockdown is going for walks. I find walks really therapeutic.
You got
for my
a dog?
Mental health. I do, but even then, I mean, even sometimes without the dog, it's good either way, to be honest. I just love being outside and love just sort of, you know, there were points in lockdown where I would go out and then 6 hours later I'd come back and I was just walking around, honestly. And then, honestly, when I got Heartstopper, I had to gain some weight. So then that was suddenly out the window. But
I did think those shirts were looking a bit tight.
They were a little, I mean, listen, they were tight, to be fair. But at the same time, I did have to.
No, I know, I'm teasing you. That's great, though.
You're not wrong, though. They were very tight. But yeah, I think that the walks were very helpful. And I found that now, as I sort of can't go on those walks anymore, I found exercise and things like that, like going to the gym or going and doing something also quite therapeutic and just good for my mental health in general. So I find that's a really good way to switch off. You know, if I go to the gym, I'll go for 2 hours and just headphones in, listen to music and just you know, switch off, which I think is really, you know, like you said, it's really important.
So again, I want to talk to you about the life of being an actor, because coming with the kind of the job title itself, you still have to, you know, apply for jobs, therefore do tapes. And with that comes a lot of rejection, or can do. I imagine your phone's just going berserk at the moment, or your agent's phone. But, you know, there's still times where, you know, we get really excited for a role, you get really invested, and it's only the audition, and you think, oh, I really want this, and it doesn't go our way.
Yeah.
How do you tackle that rejection?
I think the rejection is something that, as an actor, you have to learn to deal with. And it helped me as a child actor. I think it was good for me, because I learned quite early on how to deal with it, and how to deal with rejection, and knowing that a lot of the time it's not to do with you, you know. So I remember there was a film that I was really, really, you know, really keen to do, and I got down to the last two, and I was just, you know, I was right there. I felt like I could really just grab it. And then it got to the point where I was the only one in the running. And the director told me, I want you to play this role. And then we did a screen test, and then the studios essentially decided that they wanted to go with someone else. So I was like, in my mind, I was like, the director had told me that I'd got the role. You know, I was devastated. I wasn't, you know, I think it was before Slaughterhouse. I must have been probably, I don't know, maybe 12, 13. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, but I think I'm glad that I am glad that it happened. Because it did, just from that point, I just sort of realized like sometimes it's not going to go your way. And even if you feel like it's all going right and you're almost guaranteed to get it, sometimes it just won't happen. And it's not really anything to do with you. Like, you know, that, if anything, taught me that the director who also wrote the film, he wanted me to be in that. So it's not like I did anything wrong. I think it was just, you know, sometimes it's to do with chemistry, or sometimes it's to do with the sort of casting of your parent or your whatever. I think there are so many sort of things that play a part. So I think that taught me very early on that rejection is, it's not great, but, you know, it's nothing bad. And, you know, after that, I don't think I ever got that upset after I was rejected for, you know, a film or a show, because I also always think that, in fact, if I hadn't have got that, I wouldn't have been able to do Slaughterhouse, because it was actually filming during the same time. So I always think, you know, I did probably three or four films in that time that I would have been filming that film, that I loved filming. I loved doing all of them, and I am so grateful that I was able to. So I think that, you know, even if you are rejected for a certain job, I think that, you know, as one door shuts, another one will open. And I think that that's, you know, one of the most refreshing bits of being an actor is that it's always changing. There's always something else around the corner.
Yeah, it's a really, really good attitude to have, you know. Just, it's part of the parcel, isn't it? You just
exactly.
Take it on the chin, take it in your stride, and onwards and upwards onto the next tape, and give that 110%.
Well, exactly.
I remember talking to somebody as well, and you'll know this better than anyone as well. You know, 99% of getting the job is what you look like. Ultimately,
yeah,
they know
absolutely.
That everyone who's clearly with an agency, I would like to think, can act. And so it's ultimately then the director will watch you on screen and go, yeah, I see it. That's perfect. Mm. Or they're a big name or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's a very, there are so many aspects to the casting process, but I think it's very much to do with how you look and whether or not you fit the role and whether or not you are, you know, just if you're not right for it, if they can't see you selling that character, then it's not really anything to do with how great of an actor you are, you know? I think that there are some incredible actors who have probably missed out on several roles because they just aren't the right fit for the role. And I think that's, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there, to be honest, but it's, yeah, it's very much that, It's very much to do with your sort of physical aspects.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you must have one. I've got to ask you, what would be your dream role?
I mean, this is a difficult question. I mean, I suppose that there's always like, you know, I think every kid like dreams of being something like, you know, Spider-Man or James Bond or, you know, one of those kind of classic roles. I mean, I would honestly love to play a villain, to be honest. I'd really like doing that. I think that those are always the most kind of exciting roles to play. Just because you can really sort of, you know, so the slightly more twisted characters, you can really just have fun with it and go a bit crazy and do something really cool. I don't know if there's really like a dream, like specific character. Don't get me wrong, if there was a James Bond, if there was an opening for James Bond, I wouldn't be against it. But but yeah, I think a sort of twisted bad guy would be quite cool.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I think they've got a little bit more substance.
Yeah.
What advice would you give then to a young actor? You know, I mean, I know you yourself are only 18, but I mean, you've got more years of acting behind you than, you know, many, many in their 20s would dream to have. So what is it that you would say to somebody who's an aspiring actor?
I would say that, I mean, as we touched on, rejection is part and parcel with the job. So it's learning, do not get disheartened by it. Then I'd also say that, you know, don't be afraid to just sort of trust the process. Because although I am sort of 18, I did start, you know, when I was about 7 or 8 doing like commercials, for example. And I didn't sort of jump straight to leading a Netflix show. It was very much a, you know, I was doing Sainsbury's ads and then I suddenly got my first TV show and then I got my first film and then suddenly it's sort of, and then I got my agent who I have now. And it sort of slowly built up really over the years. And I think that if you really just sort of trust the process and wait for that moment, because it is really all about the moment and then sort of riding that wave and getting the momentum off of that one moment. And it can really be career changing. So I think trusting the process is probably my main piece of advice.
I've taken it on board. Thank you, sir.
You do not need that, Lou Strong.
I do. Man, I'm getting I'm frustrated at the moment with kind of auditions and that process. But ultimately it is my fault to actually book the job. So I can't blame anyone else. But anyway, that's another conversation. My final question, which I know I asked you on the live, and you'll probably know what it is.
Okay.
I wish I could find out what you said then and see if it resonates now. So what does the word headstrong mean to you?
I think for me, the word headstrong is always like, I mean, it's about like perseverance for me. So I think a lot of people will say that being headstrong is sort of being quite, you know, quite sort of almost not stubborn, but sort of, you know, very strong in your opinions, very like strong in your morals. But I think for me, being headstrong is, I mean, similar to do with, you know, what we've spoken about several times in this chat that we've had. It's very much sort of learning to deal with the hardships of life and of, you know, one's career. And that, you know, is sort of things like rejection and things like, you know, bad reviews possibly. I think that being headstrong for me is just a certain mental toughness, which isn't anything to do with, it's not like a sort of toxic toughness. It's more a sense of belief that things are going to be, as it says there, that things are going to be okay, you know, and that it's going to be, you know, things will work out. I think it's sort of a trusting, again, trusting the process.
Very nicely put. For anyone who has failed to see the show, Heartstopper is on Netflix. Go check it out. Kit, I can only but thank you for your time. It was absolutely wonderful. And good luck in your A-levels. We need to lock those in and then we can get straight back out there.
And then we can forget about them completely.
Hell yeah.
Can't wait.
Oh, man.
Thank you so much, man. So glad we were able to do this.
And that's it for episode 12 of season 7, and indeed season 7. A huge, huge thank you to Kit Connor for joining me on the podcast. 2.5 years in the making, but totally worth it. And I hope you agree as well. If you did enjoy it, please do go hit subscribe, leave a review and a rating. It would really, really mean a lot. Do go check out our Instagram at Headstrong Podcast. Give us a follow. Have a look at Kit's artwork on there as well. And keep in touch for season 8.